Welcome to Exagility. I'm your host, John Coleman. Quentin Cortell, delighted to have you on the Exagility podcast. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks. Yourself?
Good, thank you. Delighted to help people understand a bit more about fast fluid scaling technology. I used to tell people that another pattern that I will not name, it was the most simple pattern on the planet for multiple teams working together, multiple mobs, crews and so on. But then I discovered FAST, and I think you've got something simpler, and I think it's really cool. Can't wait to share it with everyone on the show today. But before we talk about FAST, Quentin, I'd love to learn more about how you even got to the start point. So what was your road to the beginning of FAST? So how did you even get to this point where you're even thinking about creating something like FAST?
Great question. I think I can track that back to 2002 when I first learned about extreme programming. My team adopted that and we became agile. And we just got the white book, Kent Beck's book. We read it. We kind of did everything in it. And we went, this is great. This is amazing. Then I left that company, went out in the world, became a consultant and contract developer, and then later on an agile coach. And then you get to see what agile looks like outside, or what other companies are doing with it. And you just get very frustrated at that. Hey, no, look, it's not like that. If you do these things, it gets really good. And then like, we don't want to do those things. We only want to do these things. So I kind of got a little frustrated with agile and dark agile, flaccid agile, it's been called corporate agile. So that was a little frustrating. And in 2014, I found myself at an Agile conference. The theme of that conference, well, a big topic of that conference was Agile at scale. And that was something that I was kind of not interested in. It was something that wasn't sitting right with me. I didn't even know why, but I'm thinking, you know what, let's let the dust settle on that because there's lots of conversations going on. There's smarter people than me working on this. Let them work on it. When the dust settles, I might come around and have another look. In the meantime, I'm just going to stay with what I know works and helping teams out working at the team level. So that was my opinion. I never wanted never intended to create a scaling framework or anything. But at that conference day, it was a three-day conference, and day three of the conference was an open space event. So I was familiar with open space, and this was the largest open space I'd been to. So previously, there was maybe 100, 150 people max. This one was 800 people. And it just struck me that day for some reason, just how amazingly beautiful and effective open space was. And I thought, wow, it just feels so agile. And wow, it scales as well. And then I was shocked to find myself using two words in the same sentence I never thought I would use, and which gave me this idea of like, hey, why aren't we using open space as a way to solve agile at scale, which was essentially the birth of FAST. So that was 2014. And I jumped out of my chair and had to share that with other people. Since then, I think I've put my finger on why it was that I wasn't comfortable with what I'd heard about agile scaling to that point, is that it was complicated. That now I understood the difference between complex and complicated. It's like someone took their command and control hat or complicated way of thinking to solve agile at scale. And that's what I was seeing. Whereas using open space, I'm now moving into the complex realm. And I'm like, this feels more agile, which I always think of a complex adaptive system. That was essentially the birth. It felt like it was something landed in my lap and was given to me rather than me going out to try and create something. Does that answer your question?
It does, Quentin. I'm actually really curious about it because, like you, I had seen and have seen still maybe 100 or so people doing open space together, but I've never seen 800. So, like, kind of paint a picture for us there. How did that kind of work? Was there like one facilitator? Was there a number of facilitators? How did they kind of crowdsource all the ideas that they were going to kind of figure out what sessions are going to? Because normally what would happen is we'd all submit our ideas and, you know, we do a little pitch or whatever or post it and then stick it on the wall and then people do some dot voting or something and then there's only a few rooms available or places, and then whichever one gets the most votes gets the best slots, and then, you know, you the law 2 feet and so on. But how would mm-hmm. how did it work with 800 people? How did that actually work?
Yeah, it's exactly the same, which was what was truly remarkable to me. And it took about the same amount of time. So 150 people, 800 people, still took about, you know, 30 minutes for us to self-organize a one-day conference, essentially. It's the process that you just described, less the dot voting. So someone would just get up and say, yeah, this is what I'm going to talk about, or I'm interested in listening to or facilitating, and I'm going to be over in this room at this time slot, and then they stick it on the wall. So there was no dot voting, so there's no prioritizing or in that way. Just if anyone wanted something, it went up in the slot. But it was truly remarkable that the process works at scale.
That's really cool. So they had loads of places where they could have had sessions. So basically they had more rooms than session options. So they were able to say, well, okay, I'm on in this room. We're in this part of the lobby, and that's kind of cool. That makes sense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was the inspiration. You were really struck by the power of open space that day then.
Mm-hmm.
And that open space is a really big part of FAST. So the website to find more about FAST would be fastagile.io.
Yes.
And there you can find the guide, the method and the framework. We'll talk more about that later on.
Mm-hmm.
But the open space idea, when you came back from that conference, okay, you were impressed by open space, but then what were the other ingredients that you were thinking that you might need to kind of help your teams to kind of work together more effectively?
Yeah, that's a good question, because, you know, I saw open space and thought, wow, this is a way for people to self-organize around a concept. And so I thought, well, what if those concepts was work items? So that was the core of the idea, but it raises a lot of other questions like, well, how often do you meet? And do you have a backlog? What would a backlog look like? And what about retrospectives? And what if you had to do forecasting or estimation? How would that work if teams were fluid? So there was a whole bunch of questions that were in my head. So I spent another year really thinking about those and formalizing it into a website. So it was actually almost a year later, I launched a website. It was at a conference in Utah called Agile Roots. And that was the official birthday then of FAST, because I'm like, okay, now it's got a name. And I've thought about these things, and here it is. So it's still conceptual. It was still an idea. And I shared that at a conference and got very mixed results. But there was a handful of people that were very excited about it and stayed back. And there's one gentleman in particular who said, you know, we've just gone through an agile transformation using a framework I won't mention. And it was a terrible nightmare. I wish I'd known about FAST. Because this makes sense. This creates a complex adaptive system, which was the first time I'd heard that. And I'm like, oh, it does. So I went and studied what complex adaptive systems were. I learned a lot about chaos theory and so forth. And yeah, sure enough, he's right. It does do that. So that was the launch of the concept. And then a year later, we actually got to start to put it in practice. And then started adjusting a little further, like when the rubber hits the road and we discovered more things. And that's when the FAST guide got published and I started popularizing the idea and sharing it with other people.
So, Quinton, the FAST guide has been out for over 2 years now. You've got version 3 at this stage. And I think you're after building up a kind of a community around this as well. There's even training around this as well. We're going to get to the training later on. So how easy was it for you to kind of whip up support for this approach? Because, okay, you can come up with these ideas and you can put together some ideas and so on, but how long did it take for you to get a bit of momentum behind this whole idea?
Yeah, I started sharing FAST kind of in earnest around 2019, I'm going to say. So I kind of sat on it for several years, you know, did some tweeting. But then I started like sharing it with more passion, talking about it at conferences and so on. I think it really got some interest when one day at an open space conference, Agile Open Northwest, when I got to share it with James Shaw. He was in a session that I was in. And so James Shaw is kind of a big name in the Agile industry. And he heard it. He was researching Agile at scale at that point. So he came to my session, or I think I told him, I said, hey, if you're researching that, come along. I'll talk about fast. And he came and his socks were kind of blown off, to use an expression. He was amazed. He's like, you actually did this? And he goes, this is amazing. This is the most remarkable thing I've heard. I really want to try it. So he was very impressed, asked a lot of questions. And then probably a year or 2 years later, he actually got to do an experiment with it. You can find a video online that he's spoken about it now at many other podcasts and so forth. So you can find his video. And I think that's what's really created the most attention to it, because he's a bigger name than me. And that's what's created more interest. So I've noticed a big uptick in interest ever since that video went out, and he's been speaking at conferences.
I've noticed even more momentum in 2023. It seems to be kind of whipping up more. I'm hearing about FAST from all sorts of corners, people talking about it, not as something new, but something that, you know, of course you should know about this thing. So is that accidental, or is it just the way the momentum is now building, that it's maybe kind of picking up its own head of steam? What do you think is driving the momentum at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's the, what do they call it? The long nose of innovation. Nothing, nothing, something, something, and then a sudden uptick. I think it's just the right time. I think there's a big frustration too with Agile at scale and Agile in general. So people are looking for something different. You know, people are frustrated with what they've tried. So it could be a factor of timing as well, that, you know, that word is getting out just as other people are getting frustrated with existing methods and so forth. So it's hard to know, because I've been talking about it for quite a long time. But yeah, now it's becoming popular. Kind of reminds me of a quote I heard from a rock band. Like, it took us 10 years to create our first hit, overnight hit. So they've been around forever, but all of a sudden they get discovered. Yeah.
Yeah, I can think of a band in England, Elbow, like that, 20 years to become an overnight success. And
that was probably the quote I was thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Very good. And if I look on the FAST website, there's a diagram there that I'll just describe for people, because they're listening here. And essentially there's some hexagons. And in the middle, you've got the FAST method, which I'd like you to maybe explain to us a bit more about. Mm-hmm. And then on the outer, well, you just got different color hexagons, basically, and a few things in there, like product management is in there. So that's nice to see. Good influence there. Forecasting work, visualizing work, continuously improving. A lot of people forget about that. You've got a small scale FAST and you've got a large scale FAST. Also, management innovation. I talk about that a lot myself. There's not much going on in management innovation. I have to confess, Quinton, I was listening to, actually watching Edwards Deming in a 1981 talk on YouTube a couple of weeks ago, and I felt my heart sinking, because the stuff he was talking about is still the same problem today, 42 years later after his recording. He wrote about the management points and the deadly management disease, but there have been some management innovations like Beyond Budgeting and Randan Hay and so on, and there's some cool stuff going on in Spotify as well, beyond their, I'm not talking about their scaling pattern, I'm talking about the kind of the way they operate, basically the really real way they operate. So I'd love to see the management innovation in there. And then you got mastery, so I'm guessing that's coming from the mastery purpose autonomy type thing, where you want people to be really autonomous. So can you tell us a little bit more about why they were the hexagons that you put in there? And maybe before you go into those ones on the outer hexagons, maybe let's talk a little bit about the method in the middle, the core of FAST, if you like. Can you tell us a bit about that first, and then let's go into the ones on the outside?
Okay. So the reason I call FAST a method and framework is because there's this big argument about, is it a method? Do we call it a method or do we call it a framework? I'm like, oh, I don't care. But then I kind of realized, well, it's both, because there's some aspects to FAST that I don't tell you, or the FAST is not prescriptive on. And so that becomes framework. But there are aspects to it that are very prescriptive. So that becomes method. So I just divided it out. So the core hexagon in that diagram says, yeah, this is the method. And the method is that's essentially where open space sits. So I describe FAST as it's a way for people to self-organize around work. And that's the core of it. I can say that's what it is in one sentence. And then I describe five bullet points of we merge teams together, we throw work on a wall, we self-organize into teams around work, we get some work done, and then we come back together and share progress. We synchronize. And then we repeat that on a short cycle. So that's FAST in a couple of sentences. And that represents the core method that you would follow. And then you're doing FAST. So everything else around that are things that can help FAST or a different aspect of FAST. So, for example, small-scale FAST versus large-scale FAST. And so what those differences are. Would you like me to talk about
those? Yes, please. Yeah, I'd love to. So just before we get into that, so my understanding is there's a kind of like you put the work on the wall, and is there an element of like market of skills as well in terms of who can do what? And so teams will figure out how they're going to – they might end up staying together for a while, actually, but they have the option to kind of create new teams if they need to. That you don't tell people, you know, they'll do what they should do. And the cycles are very short. They're like two-day cycles, I understand you, although the cycle isn't fixed either. Like that can change as well, right? And there's a FAST meeting. That's actually where we organize around the work. But I'm guessing that's also where you probably look at what progress you made since the last time. Can you just tell us a little bit about that core cycle before we dig into the outer part of FAST and so on?
Yeah. The meeting, as you mentioned, the meeting is the core part of that. And the meeting is inspired by open space, where we create a marketplace. In open space, we create a marketplace, which represents these are the sessions that are going to be available within the conference. So the marketplace in FAST is a marketplace of work, which is we decide, hey, given what we know about the world today and about the product, what should we be doing right now? So it's a sensing question that we ask ourselves collectively at this meeting. And like open space, we'll have people say, well, I think we should do this, and I'd like to lead a team on that, and I'm going to do that in room number one. And someone else will say, well, I think, you know, I've been working on this other thing, I'm going to be continuing on that, I'm going to be in room number two, and so on. So that follows the open space pattern. So once we've kind of worked out what we should work on in this cycle, then everyone else looks at the work and says, well, based on that work, I think I'm most interested in the work that's in room number two. I'm going to go to room two. So then whoever else shows up in room two, that's my team for that cycle. And we make progress towards whatever work item it was that went up there. So as you mentioned, work cycles are short. It's up to the collective to work out, you know, what makes sense for them. And they don't have to be the same either. You can do a 2-day, then a 3-day, which kind of fits into a week, or you can do 2.5 days, you can do a week. Whatever works for the collective. So we get some work done, and then we come back together and we synchronize, which means each team will give an update on, hey, this is what the rest of the collective needs to know about what we did or what we discovered, just so that everyone is then on a shared consciousness or understanding of like, okay, since last time we met, this is where the product is now. So we're all clicked into the next level. And then the product manager might share some more information. This is some discovery work that we've been doing, and this is which changes our product backlog. You know, we've got this new feature that's come in. So the product manager will typically lead that meeting and say, okay, here's the state of things, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it. this is what may have changed. And then we say, hey, while we're together, let's kick off the next cycle. So we go straight back into that open space event of, okay, using our sense of what's happened since last time, what should we do now?
And would each team have its own product backlog, Quinton, or are you kind of silent on that about how that's all organized, where that work is stored?
Yeah, that's a collective backlog, essentially.
Yeah.
So we, you know, I kind of recommend using something like a story map. We ended up calling it a product map because not everything is a story. Yeah. So a product map, which is just a visualization of the big picture. Like, hey, if I was to visualize what we're working on, the big picture of what we're working on, what does it look like? And I can say, well, there's a product map. Like, there's the features, there's the discoveries, these are the outcomes. You know, these are the bets. Whatever kind of work item types you're doing, now I can visualize them and I can see some context to them. I might see a release there and say, this is out of scope, this is in scope. But just a way to look at that. And so the collective is looking at that. And then we say, as a collective, what should we work on? So, yeah, the backlog is owned by the entire collective and we're pulling from the backlog or not. So sometimes someone will get up and say, hey, we need to do some architectural work. Wasn't on the backlog. But I think it's really important that we do that and now's the time to do it. Who wants to be involved with it? I think there's a component layer that needs to come out. I'm going to be in room number 4 and then people show up for that too. So we're using the collective intelligence of the collective. I love the word collective is in there. The collective's collective intelligence to say what should we do right now, and we're relying on that collective intelligence to determine what needs to happen.
Yeah, if you ever rebrand, that might be a nice name, actually. Collective intelligence, definitely have it as a slogan. I think it's really good. In terms of roles, then, you mentioned product manager, but I don't know whether the product manager, maybe they already exist, but are there any kind of formal roles or anything like that in FAST? What do you do about people and organizing stuff?
Everyone is a member of the collective. So the product manager is a member as well. There's the product manager, as I mentioned. The only other roles, they're transient. So you might put that hat on and then, you know, take it off and give it to someone else, which is a team steward, which is essentially a team lead for that cycle. So if you stand up at the meeting and say, yeah, I'd like to do this, and I'm in room number 1, you're a team steward. And then there's a feature steward, which is optional. We discovered that we needed a feature steward, and that's how it entered the framework. Because teams are fluid in FAST, there was a situation where there's someone in the organization said, hey, who do I talk to about this feature, you know, that was currently going on? And I said, that's a good question, because it seems fluid. So we decided to say, hey, anytime we kick off a new feature or a new bet or, you know, we're chasing a new opportunity, then we would put a name against that and identify one person. So that person doesn't own it, but they are responsible for being able to speak to it. So you'll be able to say, here's what progress we've made, here's what we've discovered, here's where we are with it. So they're the three roles in FAST.
Cool. Mm. So that's the basic method, right, at the core.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mentioned there's small FAST and there's large FAST. Can you tell us a little bit more about those?
Yeah. So FAST can be used in place of Scrum. So if you're a Scrum-sized team because you're doing Scrum, you can use FAST. So the name FAST is an acronym for Fluid Scaling Technology. So a lot of people don't realize, you can use it small scale as well, because it's just FAST as a way to self-organize people around work. It doesn't matter if it's 5 people or 50. So it's in that way, it's, that's the scaling aspect to it. It's fractal. So small scale FAST would be for a team of like 5, 7 to 9 people, a Scrum or XP size team. It's a little different in that you know, the work items that that would come into play inside the marketplace would be more closer to, they'll be a little smaller. So I think that's about it, that you would look at stories. The teams might be a pair. You might be working solo still. It's totally up to the collective. It's still called a collective, you know, if they want to work solo or if they want to do ensemble. That's small scale fast. And then large scale fast is what you already heard, where the collective is larger than one size team. So as soon as you've merged two teams together, if you're going to kick off something with fast, those two teams become one collective. Now you're in scaled world. How big can a collective be? I know it works with the 60. My theory is it could go to 150. I don't know you'd ever want 150 people in one collective. I'm more a fan of descaling. I think, you know, you get 30 good people together and highly collaborating. I think they can do more than 150 people that aren't collaborating well. So try to avoid numbers just for the sake of numbers. But yeah, I think in theory, you could probably have 150. And then you could have multiples of 150. So then you're entering like enterprise scale fast.
The management innovation hexagon, what's that about, Quentin?
That's that word I picked. I was inspired by Beate Boschness. I'm hoping I pronounced his name correctly.
Yeah,
from Beyond Budgeting. Yes, and he describes, so Beyond Budgeting is more than just budgeting. You know, it's a whole change in management style. And I heard him speak recently. It was earlier this year. I heard a keynote of his in Prague. And he says, you know, we're lacking management innovation. We've been, the management process we have are over 100 years old and they haven't changed much. And yet we've changed so much else about business, like agile and so forth. But our management processes, and budgeting is just one example, annual budgeting, they haven't changed. And they're well overdue for some innovation. So I think fast really touches well into, well, it could, because it's based in self-organization and self-organization at scale, you're moving into a very different management model. So a lot of questions come up about, like, well, what do managers do and what does management look like, and what about job titles and all of these kind of things, which is interesting because no one asks about that in Scrum or Kanban or other things, but with fast, it comes to the surface. So my answer to that is, hey, go and look at the work of these other pioneers in management innovation, because there's a lot of answers to your questions over there. So I don't want to answer that because, like, that's not part of fast, but understanding that can help you with fast. So that's where it becomes the framework aspect of it. Lots of books that I can recommend, and you can go start reading about how self-management works, how to answer all of those questions, and which is really exciting to me because it's well overdue. I think it really addresses what we should be doing in our workplaces. You know, we're moving towards more human systems, and I think that's really exciting. And it's almost like I care more about that aspect than about the rest of fast, because I think there's so much juice in that and so much to gain from organizations moving in that direction. Whereas fast is just a tool towards that that might bump you in that direction. Or if you're already going that direction, then fast is highly compatible with things you're already doing. So that's the relationship there.
Yeah, I've been thinking along those lines as well, my own work, and I was thinking maybe what people want is something that's timely, because we can't ignore time, but something that's humane, a place where you've got happy people serving happy customers, happy users, hopefully, and effectiveness. Are we doing the right thing? You know, kind of the timely kind of deals with the efficiency part a little bit. So that's kind of an expression I'm playing around with, timely, humane, effectiveness. Because we could be satisfying all our customers and all that, but maybe we're burning out our employees and, you know, things like that. So I like where you're going with that, actually. That's really cool. Then in terms of visualizing work, you mentioned the product map already. Are there other types of visualization tools that you recommend as well?
Yeah, so there's two that we used when FAST was born. One was the product map, and the other one was called a discovery tree. And after we came up with the discovery tree, and someone told me about opportunity mapping, which is something that Teresa Torres created. Yeah. Very similar. In fact, it maps on directly. However, like Teresa Torres' opportunity map is all about, well, the root node of that tree is always an opportunity. So it's around discovery work. Whereas in a discovery tree, the root node could be a feature. So it can be done for delivery work, or if the root node was an opportunity, then it can be discovery work as well. So it can be used in both ways. We call it a discovery tree. But we found it extremely useful for visualizing work, so for breaking work down. It's particularly useful in FAST because if you've got fluid teams, it enabled an individual to go and join a team that had been running for a while and been working through something. And I can look at that discovery tree and see very quickly, oh, that's what you've been doing. I can see what's been done. I can see where you're up to now. And I can see the context of what work we're currently doing. So we found that very useful. So I share those. They're going to be, I'm working on version 3 of the guide, which is greatly stripped down. And so there's going to be a separate guide for these various aspects of the framework aspects to FAST. So the visualizing work, I'll share those two tools. And I'm sure there's many other ways to visualize work as well. So that's why I say, hey, find a way to visualize your work. So I know James Shaw, he didn't use those tools in his first implementation. I don't know about since then. So you don't have to use them. But we do say visualizing work is a very helpful tool for the collective to see the big picture and to track what's going on at any given point.
And you mentioned forecasting as well. So how do you manage expectations with FAST? So it's very fluid, as you mentioned. So I guess people, that probably goes with the territory then, that maybe stakeholders are expecting things to be fluid. But what have you used so far with managing expectations?
Yeah, because the thinking at the time when FAST was born was, the teams doing the work should be the ones that estimate the work. And I thought, well, if we've got fluid teams, how's that going to work? So that's where I started thinking about that question. I don't think there's one answer to that. My advice with forecasting is find something very lightweight and quick, because all forecasting is wrong anyway. So if you find something heavyweight, you're wasting a lot of time to get something which you could have got a lot easier. So the easiest one that I thought of, and that we used a little in the first implementation of FAST, was Wisdom of Crowds forecasting, where we just asked the entire collective, hey, how many person days is in this feature or in this opportunity? And we'd all take a guess without influencing anyone around you. We'd have a little mobile app.
It's like blind, is it? A blind estimation?
Yes. Yeah, nice. Link estimation, blind estimation. Everyone took a guess. We averaged it. I got the number just like that. Was it right? It was just as right as every other stupid, dumb forecasting method there was out there. And it's very quick, very easy. And you can keep doing it. So a month later, you can say, hey, given what we know now and what we've done, how many person days is left on this thing? And so you can track it that way. Is it good? It's good enough. Other experiments I've heard of that are going on is Monte Carlo forecasting and people using the discovery tree. And so the end leaf nodes are something that you can count. I don't know much about it. I haven't done it myself, but I'm hearing people are doing that. So I love experimentation. Another experiment I would suggest is find someone else, not even in the collective, and say, hey, you do the forecasting because you're not involved with it. Because if you're in it, people have optimism bias. So, how do we get around that? And so you have someone that's not in the collective and it's looking at it from a dispassionate point of view. Maybe they do it and you go, hey, they're responsible. So I don't know. And so that's why forecasting is part of the framework. And it's to say, hey, go, if you need forecasting, go find something. Here's some tools that we've done. You can pick one of those or you can go find your own. But it's something that you've got to think about if it's needed by your organization.
So I can see how FAST is helping autonomy and alignment as well. And, you know, it's kind of dealing with both actually in a fluid way. But you've also got a couple of black colored hexagons on your diagram. Same color as the central FAST one as well, because I guess that means they're really important. And you've got continuously improve and mastery. And so what I'm wondering is how that happens. Does it happen on a rhythm? Like you hear about lots of other types of approaches where they use retrospectives and things like that, or they have time for learning. So what ideas do you have in FAST around those two areas of improvement and mastery?
Yeah, again, this is where I say, hey, you've got to work this one out. And by the way, here's some things that I can share. The mastery in particular is, I mentioned I came from extreme programming. So in extreme programming, we care a lot about code craft and code quality, which relates to those very specific practices that we do, like test-driven development, continuous integration, continuous refactoring. Mm-hmm. So there's things that we do that are a core part of XP. So the code crafter in me, like I'm like, oh, if I'm creating an agile method, the code crafter is like, well, put that in, shove that in. And a lot of my, you know, XP buddies like, make sure you include that. And I didn't. Instead, I put, for a couple of reasons. One is, I think that was maybe why Scrum was more palatable than XP. And so in this place, I said mastery. Because also not everyone is going to be a software developer in there too. And FAST can be used out, not in software projects. It's just a way for people to self-organize around work, right? You might be putting up a barn and, hey, I don't need to refactor my code or continuous integration. So, but mastery is important. And that's my answer to speak to, hey, if you're a software developer, then spend time getting good at your craft. And that should lead you down the path of, hey, reading, you know, XP and learning these practices. And as an organization, make sure that you're addressing people's need and desire to have mastery experiences at work. So for us, the initial experiment, we had time to do research. We had Kata time. So there are examples that I'll share in the sub guide on mastery of like, hey, this is how ways that you can address mastery. But essentially, think about it, because it's a really important aspect to why people go to work, according to Daniel Pink. As you mentioned, the other two aspects are already there, but this third aspect of mastery is missing. So that's the mastery piece. And the continuously improve. Yeah, again, so, you know, Scrum talks about retrospectives, and I thought, well, do I include a retrospective in FAST? But if I do, where? Because who would do the retrospective? Like, if teams are fluid, what's, you know, does that make sense? So essentially, I there is no retrospective meaning, but I did say, hey, find a way to continuously improve. And a retrospective is just one way of continuous improvement as well. There are other ways. So Woody Zool talks about turn up the good, which is something that we did in the first implementation. The other idea I've had for continuously improving, we did one experiment on that, and since spoke to Diana Larson about that experiment, and she's like, yeah, you're definitely on the right track with that one, which was having an open space event, like a regular scheduled open space event, maybe it's once a month, where we say, hey, for the next 2 days, instead of us doing work, we're going to have a open space event with the theme of improvement. And that would be how we could address that, which is kind of like a retrospective, but at scale. Yeah. So there's different ideas. And you know, if you come up with a way to retrospect, go retrospect. Or if you come up with other ideas, go do them. So again, find a way to continuously improve. There's different implementations. Go work it out.
Yeah, I'm guilty in my Scrum training of saying to the attendees to break one of the rules of Scrum, and you know the retro is time boxed. We won't worry about how long it is, but let's say it's an hour and a half or something like that, right? So they figure out in 20 minutes what the problems are. The dogs in the street know what the issues are. I say to the team, you got 1 hour and 10 minutes. I want you to fix something right now. And they go, huh? Yeah, like, let's not make any promises. You know, I'm supposed to be losing weight and getting fit. Look at me, you know, it's not happening. So can we just be make peace with what we're actually going to do here? And I'll be very happy, guy, if you just fix one thing in the next 1 hour and 10 minutes. Can you do that? That's kind of breaking the rules there. But I do like the idea of that open space idea, because if you have an event where you're actually going to improve, someone will eventually ask the question, why are we doing this? Nothing's getting better. So if you're actually making the improvement on the spot, I think that's really cool. And there's lots of ways you can do that, as you say. That's really nice. So you're adding lots of flexibility. What I'm sensing, it really is fluid. You're giving lots of guidance and you're saying you need to worry about these things. Here's some pointers. Figure it out yourself. But there are some central things that, you know, you're pretty hard on, but it's such, it's about autonomy and alignment and so on. So you mentioned version 3 and you mentioned that you've kind of stripped out some things. What would be the kind of the key things that they're probably, I'm sure the things that you stripped out were still very important to you, but you're probably saying in the cold light of day that it needs to be simple in order to get traction. And also maybe sometimes things are optional really. So was that what kind of inspired you with your simplification? What were the things that maybe ended up being kind of taken out in the latest version of FAST?
Yes, it was the realization that FAST is a method and a framework. So all of the framework aspects, the surrounding hexagons in that image, they're all going to be in their own separate guides. And just, the guide is just going to address the core piece to it, which is fantastic because it makes a very simple document. And the current, you know, previous document is about 20 pages and it describes product maps and discovery trees. And there's lots of quotes in there. So, you know, I really had to think, you know, does this really add to it? Let's just create a really simple document so people can pick it up, read that and understand it. I'm also working on the book. So if they need more, they can go to the book. And for them to, if they want to understand, you know, the tools that we recommend for visualizing work, they can go read the visualizing work guide. And that opens this up to other people to help with these other guides as well, and to share their experiments with, hey, we're using Monte Carlo, here's how Monte Carlo works, and so forth. So yeah, those guides can become richer and fuller as needed. But the core guide is now down to 6 pages. So it's going to be a very lightweight document.
That's really nice. That'll probably help the momentum as well, I think.
Yeah.
I could relate to what you're saying. Yeah.
Hey, there's one hexagon that you didn't ask about that I'd love to chat about, which is the product management one.
Yeah.
So that one is off to one side as well, in that you can use FAST, and it doesn't say this anywhere in the guide. Maybe it'll be a separate guide later, I don't know, but it's definitely going in the book. But there's two modes that you can run a FAST collective in. And one is, I got to work out names for it, but one is essentially feature factory mode. And then the other one is more modern product management mode. And, you know, because there's a lot of places out there, and this is true of the very first FAST implementation I was part of. It was still feature factory. We were doing no product discovery, but I'm very passionate about all these tools that are available now around product-led organizations, and you know, which I'm calling modern product management. And so that's what that sub-guide will describe, to say, hey, look, there's two modes. You can do this in feature factory mode just fine. So your product backlog will be a story map of features, right? So it's a feature factory. There's the features. That's what we're working on. There's a release. And it's fine. Like, if that's the way your organization is, that's where it is in its evolutionary cycle. But if you've gone to this next step and really understand, you know, product management and all of the tools available to that, you know, getting closer to the customer, you know, working from that point of view, then your backlog or your product map is going to look very different. And I think this is something that I really hope that the product managers will hear it, because like reading a lot of work from, you know, Marty Kagan, Melissa Perry, they're kind of frustrated with Agile. They'll say, look, Agile is good for delivery, but it doesn't help us with discovery. And I'm hoping that FAST is the first framework method that really addresses both. I'm like, hey, because in FAST, you can be doing discovery work and delivery work at the exact same time. So at the marketplace, you go, yeah, I'm going to be working on this opportunity. We'll be doing UX, we'll be doing customer interviews. So they're the kind of things I'll be describing if I'm working on a team doing that type of discovery work, where someone else will get up and say, yeah, I'm working on that feature. That feature's already gone through the whole discovery cycle. We know that it's something that we want to do. But both of these things are now happening in the same cycle. So, which I love, that it gives engineers an opportunity to rotate through a product team and really stay in touch with the customers. And, you know, in the hope that they can be part of customer interviews, you know, continuous discovery of the product and understanding the metrics that they need to build into the product to say, hey, you know, okay, this thing is now in production, but does it actually do what we intended it to do? And now they're a part of that whole understanding of that, rather than, you know, being fed features into the feature factory. So that's why product management
complexity is off on one side.
And that would describe the two modes.
Yeah, complexity does something similar as well. It's got discover to deliver, basically interlaced discovery and delivery. I really like that you're going. What I also like what you're saying is there's honesty in it as well. And this is probably the influence of your, I guess the Frederick Laloux stuff is kind of influencing here as well, about meeting people where they are. And I'm just guessing that it's about, if that's the where they are, we know we shouldn't be just a feature factory. We should be discovering. We know that a high percentage of our backlog we should never build. If we do discovery really well, we'll weed out the bad ideas. You'll find better ones, but you get lots of organizations that are still in that rut. And can you at least fix their plumbing is kind of what you're saying, right? In one mold.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. That, you know, you're in feature factory mode, and a lot of companies don't even know that they are, right? Like you mentioned, because they're evolutionary understanding. And this is something new to me. Like I'm still a dev, right? And in my 20 years of software development, 20 plus years, I've only ever worked, well, other than a very short stint with a startup, I've only ever worked in feature factories. Like it's still the de facto mode of development out there. And if you read the software manifesto, it's describing a feature factory. So, you know, a lot of a more modern understanding of agility isn't captured in the manifesto. And so I think it's early days still for organizations to really get a grasp of you know, becoming customer focused and product led and what that means. Super exciting. So I think that product management, modern product management and management innovation, like you combine those two, and that's what really gets me excited. And I'm hoping FAST is a way to accelerate those. And is also a tool for organizations that are in that space to go, wow, this will really help us with the way that we want to work.
Also, I was talking to Woody Zuhl recently, and we were talking about mob programming. And it kind of came up in the conversation that maybe FAST would be a nice way of scaling mobs. I don't know whether you ever thought about that, but mob programming, you could do mob UX, you could do mob anything, but it's the idea, some people call it ensemble work, we get together, we're all on one computer. Seems like ridiculous, how could we all be on one computer? But it's really, you really go into a zone, you're really empathizing with each other. You can learn it using a game called the mob programming role-playing game as well. Mm-hmm. You'd find that on YouTube, it's really cool. And you talked about collaboration earlier, because like, you haven't got the ability to collaborate. That's really what FAST is dealing with. But mob programming is also dealing with that as well, where we're actually understanding each other more because we're taking turns at the driving wheel, so to speak. Have you seen any examples in the field, Quinton, where people are mobbing as well as using Fast.
Yes, yes. I'm glad you mentioned that. And isn't it great that we're seeing more innovation and disruption now around processes and collaboration, mob programming being a great example. So when we were at Primera, which is where Fast was born, and we were looking at mastery, we would ask ourselves questions like, hey, what experiment should we do for mastery? So we would get trainers in, and Woody's always was someone that we got in, and we said, hey, let's get Woody in. We'll do a workshop on mob programming. And we did that. And yes, the remarkable thing about the training was that after the training, every single team chose to do mob programming when they broke away into a team. And that was not enforced. The only rule that we had was that all production code had to be at least pair programmed. That was the only rule we had. But every single team decided to work as a mob, as in that style of ensemble. So it's highly compatible with Fast because of their focus on collaboration. And it makes it very easy for people to step in and step out of a team too. So with the fluid nature of teaming, it really greases that wheel. Let's word it that way. So yeah, we had yes, it really is. Yeah, so highly recommend it.
Quinton, if people want to find out more about Fast, you got the guide, version 3 now. Fantastic, nice and simplified. Love the way you've done that. I like the idea of the associated guides as well. I agree with you on your take on discovery and delivery and product and where it's going. And I love the honesty as well about people who are not in that space yet and giving them a path to get there. But so there's the guide, and then you've got a book that you're working on. But are there training courses? Where can people go and get trained on this, Quinton?
Yes, thanks for asking. So on the Fast website, there is a link to training. Right now, we've got a two-day class that we've put together. We run several times in several countries. So we plan on continuing that. And I'll be updating the website with dates and locations of that class. So that's a place to go to find out information on that.
So that's fastagile.io, is that correct?
Fastagile.io, yeah.
Lovely. Very good. Thank you so much, Quinton, for coming on the show. It was an absolute pleasure to hear all about Fast, and I'm sure you're going to hear more. It sounds really, really cool, and it's ticking a lot of boxes and makes a lot of sense. And I hope people see that sense and they kind of latch onto it, so to speak. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.